This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
All right, let's talk some football. We led off with a football topic, well, Wes. Yeah. That we kind of stole the idea. We give them all the credit in the world from a Pick 6 preview. And they did a breakdown. They did this for everybody. But in the last 20 NFL drafts, how has your school and your respective conference done as far as who's been the best in the tight end department, offensive linemen, quarterbacks? They did for every position group. And I ran across this the other day. I thought it was a great idea. So we gave it to our experts, the smart folks up there in Bristol, to kind of tweak a little bit. And so we've come up with this. But the genesis of this whole concept, we give Pick 6 Previews all the credit on this. But it did lead to some interesting numbers within the ACC, and as we like to call them, bar bets. And if you're watching the screen on television, here is the breakdown position group in which ACC school has been the most successful in putting draftees into the NFL draft in the last 20 drafts. And some of the numbers and teams, I think, are very surprising.
Yeah, the Louisville quarterback thing probably jumps off the page, right? But to me, Florida State defensive line, I don't think that's a big surprise. The Miami running back and Clemson wide receiver, you thought that would be the answer, right? You thought that was the way that would go?
I did. Okay. Those didn't surprise me. The Louisville quarterback number did surprise. I would have been wrong about Louisville in the five spot.
Right. Okay. Look at the number of Miami and Virginia Tech at 23, that's 23 each, right?
That's right.
I mean, that's a huge number. That's a huge number. The Florida State D-line thing is a huge number. That's five football teams worth of picks. When you think about it, it's five, almost six football teams worth of picks, Mark, in 20 years from those schools.
The one that surprised me on the defensive side was Florida State. And it wasn't that it was Florida State. It was the number. 23 defensive linemen. Now, let that marinate a second. This is over the last 20 NFL drafts. And Florida State, we know they've recruited at a great level, whether it be Bobby Bowden, Jimbo Fisher, and the combination of quarterbacks there for after. And, of course, Mike Norvell's trying to add to that legacy. But 23 defensive linemen, Wes. In this day and age where, hey, you better be great up front, whether it be the offensive line, the defensive line, you better have the dudes, right? And Florida State, for such a long period of time, had them. 23 is a big number.
All right, go back to, within the last 20 years, we certainly can go back to the Jimbo Fisher when they beat Auburn, right, in the last BCS National Championship game, okay? You then can go back about 5 years prior to that, 6 years prior to that, right before the tail end of Bobby Bowden, right? I mean, they were lit up good then. Then, Pack, we can go back to the early 2000s where they were a household brand on the defensive front, right? I mean, that's the part about Florida State. They've had established factory press in the last few years, and you know, we saw DeMarcus Walker and Brian Burns in those highlights. Those are just two guys that were first round picks that kind of, you know, lit it up, if you will, right? I mean, those are the guys that kind of lit it up when you think about the consistency and the continuity of a program, and the defensive line in particular. Florida State kind of fits that bill when you think of 20 years.
Agree with you 1,000%. The other thing, too, if I had to pick another one, and you touched on it a second ago, are defensive backs. And Miami and Virginia Tech, again, the number is 23. And, boy, you go back through the legacy of Virginia Tech football in the secondary. And, again, Frank Beamer had it going on the early part of the century. And, again, you saw another Virginia Tech Hokie in the secondary going to first round this last NFL draft. Virginia Tech has had kind of a sneaky reputation in terms of putting great players, not good, great players in the league in the defensive backfield. And, again, when you go through that number again, I said it, There's so many bar bets on that list, it's not even funny. But there's just a couple that just kind of pop off the page when you see it. Because if you close your mind, you close your eyes and say, okay, let me guess which team and what the number would be if I said tight ends or defensive backs, what your initial response would be as an ACC football fan, how close would you have come to getting, number one, the team right, much less the number? But when you see 20-something, again, we had 23 with defensive linemen at Florida State, 23 with Miami, Virginia Tech, and defensive backs. That's an impressive number over the last 20 NFL drafts. That's a big number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll still go back to the Louisville quarterback thing as being the surprise maybe of the whole sheet. Wouldn't you think?
I totally agree. Totally agree. Okay. In fact, I tell you, not only would I have been wrong guessing it, if you said, hey, I'm going to give you two.
Okay.
If I gave you two guesses, would you get it right? I would have been wrong on both guesses. Now, I think all the other ones, eventually, hey, you got two chances to guess. I think you'd be in the neighborhood. But I don't know if you'd have been right about Louisville and five quarterbacks drafted over the last 20 NFL drafts. That's crazy.
All right. So if you did, who would you have guessed?
You know what? I would have guessed NC State. Now call me crazy.
That's the one.
I would have guessed NC State because they put so many guys in the National Football League where you're like, again, initial reaction, if you hit me on the street, Pack, what do you think? I would have guessed NC State. Not a bit dead wrong. 100% wrong. But it is what it is. Again, these are interesting numbers. Just one of those post-NFL draft deals that can get in some great debates.
All right, here's the list of the Louisville quarterbacks. I went back to just kind of confirm this here. Okay, ready?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to start with, because Chris Redmond was a 2000 draft pick, he does not count, correct?
Last 20 NFL drafts.
Lumberjacks,
I think. 02 to last
week. There you go. So, we're going to start with Dave Ragone, who, by the way, is the new offensive coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons. Third-round pick in 2003, the 88th overall.
Throw it to Kyle Pitts.
Then we're going to go up the list.
Throw it to Kyle Pitts.
Stephon LaFour's pack. Stephon LaFour's.
Would never have guessed.
Fourth-round pick, 2005. Oh, it gets better. Brian Brohm. Second round pick, 2008. Teddy Bridgewater, first round pick, 2014.
Lamar.
And the last one, Lamar Jackson. Stephon LaFour's got gotcha, you.
I would have totally whiffed. I'm just telling you. That's why it's a great bar bet.
Yeah.
I was doing a show the other day on Off Campus where we were doing a breakdown of the last 5 years of the NFL draft about who's done more with less and less with more and all that kind of stuff. And I was stunned to find, I think, that Miami had more draft picks than Clemson in the last 5 years. I would never guess that in a million years.
Hmm.
Crazy.
Right? I'm looking here real quick. I'm checking. I want to double-check NC State on this because Phillip Rivers was drafted in 2004. That's one. The next quarterback
Wes,
drafted.
Wait, can I stop you right a second?
Math with Wes.
No. Let me just stop you right here before you start doing on-air research. We gave this to the smart people in Bristol yesterday.
We have
an entire department on campus. It's really close to the dark building, and it's got all that FBI, BPI nonsense. These are research experts, hundreds of them. That just comb for information.
Yeah.
And here you are on the fly.
Yeah.
I sense questioning whether the smart people in Bristol were accurate with this stat.
No. Just looking at the names.
Go ahead with your on-air live research. Could have done this yesterday, but no, you're going to go embarrass yourself.
I tell you what.
Go ahead.
I'm not going to embarrass myself. NC State, I think, is four, and
the
reason they're not tied with Louisville – well, that's true. Phillip Rivers. Then it goes to Mike Glennon. Jacoby Brissett.
Oh.
And that's the last one.
So what?
Do you know the technicality on that one? And Ryan Finley, by the way. It's four. Okay.
Again,
do we know the technicality on that one?
Go ahead.
Right. Russell Wilson counts for Wisconsin.
Are we going to get in that debate again? I mean, good God. But
no, I just left it there.
The poor people in Raleigh, the poor people in Raleigh, North Carolina, still have this debate. It's like, guys, move on. Everybody get credit. How about we do that? And just save everybody all the aggravation of time, money, being upset. Russell's ours. No, he's yours. Hey, everybody gets a piece of Russell Wilson. I don't even care. Give him an NC State
degree.
He's
speaking at commencement, bro.
That's what I said. He's speaking at the commencement. Give him all the credit in the world. It doesn't matter to me. Wisconsin can take credit. NC State can take credit. Let's move on. The world, we got more important things to worry about than debating the Russell Wilson. Is he a Wolfpacker or is he a Badger? He's both. He's both. Move on. I've never seen more time spent on something so stupid as is Russell Wilson an NC State guy or a Wisconsin guy. He played for both of you.
But
great. Move on.
Now, let's just say going to break, you've been known to push a button or two every once in a while.
Yeah, but that's stupid. That's like one of the dumbest debates I've ever heard. It really is. It's one of the dumbest ACC debates ever.
Okay.
I know. Want to get out. You don't want to say anything controversial. I will say it. It's stupid. NC State, take credit for him. Listen, I went to NC State games and watched him play there. I know he went to NC State. Taggy's yours. Awesome. I watched the Wisconsin games. I saw him play for them too. They want to take credit? Great. Why do we care? Everybody's have a party.
You got the best of both worlds.
Right. I got two pizzas. Everybody gets pizza. Yeah. I mean, I don't even understand why people argue
everybody
about this.
Everybody gets
stuff.
Pizza.
Everybody gets pizza.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
All right, let's go down to Tiger Town because that sounds like a good idea. In fact, I think I'll do that later this afternoon. Monty Lee running the show for Clemson Baseball. The Tigers are all of a sudden smoking hot, fresh off of just beating up on Louisville, and nobody's ever done that in this league and sweep the Louisville Cardinals in the three-game series. Coach joins us. Monty, first of all, good morning. And, boy, I tell you what, you're getting hot at the right time.
Well, we've been playing good baseball the last 2 weeks. You know, being at home certainly helps. We tend to play a little better at home. You know, we swept Wake Forest and carried that momentum right in to this weekend, this past weekend, against the number four Louisville Cardinals, you know, a team that looking at it and reflecting on it, you can't believe it happened. They had not been swept in ACC play ever, and we were able to find a way to sweep them, you know, here at home. And just really proud of my guys. We played complete baseball for three games, swung the bats exceptionally well, pitched really well, and able to come up with three wins.
Monty, though, the highs and lows of this thing are real, right? I mean, the journey is still the journey, and you guys have probably learned a lot along the way. Probably also helps, too, that Mac went out and beat Vanderbilt last night. That's got to make you feel a little better about the weekend as well, I'm guessing.
Well, as you guys know, Earl Weaver many, many years ago said it best, momentum is today's starting pitcher. I actually watched some of the game, the Vanderbilt-Louisville. You know, the Louisville Vanderbilt game, and you know, you look at the starter that Louisville ran out there. He's left-handed, throwing 94, 95 with a really good breaking ball. He's that kind of guy's going to give you a chance every time he runs out there. And our starting pitching this past weekend was the reason that we were able to create really good momentum against their team. Mac Anglin looked like a true Friday night guy again. Keyshawn Askew, and then Matt Clark. Matt, you know, ran into a little bit of trouble there at the beginning of the game on Sunday, but settled in and threw the ball really, really well. Overall, our starting pitching is the reason that we were able to create such good momentum. And then offensively, we scored early. That was a big key for us, especially in game one and in game three, as we were able to put together big innings in the first inning and really put a lot of pressure in their dugout. Those types of things, if you can do those things, if your starting pitching is good and you can find a way to score multiple runs early in the game, you put the pressure in the other dugout and you just keep all that good momentum in your dugout. It's, you know, that's a recipe for success, and that's why we won three games.
Coach, who's hotter? Caden Grice, who just nobody can get out, or Valerie Cagle in softball? Who's the hotter prospect right now down there in Tiger Town?
I would. My answer would be Valerie Grice. So you know they're pretty much. I think they're one. I think they're one and the same, right? I mean, you know, they're both just unbelievable players, and you know, Caden Grice, our guy, is just special. He's come up with big hit after big hit. He was a national player of the week. I think he's been the ACC player of the week twice this year. And Cagle, I mean, you know, every time I cut on the television or look on social media, she's doing amazing things for Coach Rittman and their team, and they're having an incredible season. So, you know, both of them right now are just superstars in our respective programs. And, you know, the Clemson fans have, obviously a lot of great things to be able to watch. Between Cagle and Grice.
I want to follow up with Grice a second. And I just had asked you this during the break. But this guy, 6'5", 6'6", 235, 240. I mean, this is a grown man, mm-hmm. right? I mean, he is a really great athlete.
He's a really – yeah. I mean, I think Caden is 6'6", 240. And he can really move. I mean, this is a guy – when he came in, quite honestly, guys – we didn't really know if he was going to be more of a pitcher or hitter. He was scouted as both, and the power is just so impressive at the plate. As he got more and more at-bats in the fall inter-squads and in the spring inter-squads going into the season, he just kept developing as a hitter. And he's pitched a little bit for us, but he's a guy that we fully expect when guys like Englund, if Englund were to get drafted, you know, Keyshawn Askew we think is going to get drafted. This guy could slide into our weekend rotation next year and be a guy for us on the mound as well. But he's also a very good athlete. You know, he plays some first base for us, but we could put him in the outfield. He could very easily play left field or right field. He's a slightly above average runner for a guy that big. So, he's a special talent.
Well, Monty, you know, because I think Michael Johnson was with you, wasn't he, for a year or so? Is that right, as a volunteer guy or in and around the tenure there? I mean, he was a big guy that played first base. He was from Georgetown. Caden Grice is from Greer. What in the world? You got to go to these little hooks and nooks in the corner in South Carolina to find these monsters that hit it for you?
Well, that's pretty interesting. So I was an assistant coach at our rival school when Michael Johnson was playing at Clemson, and they are very, very similar. Both have very quiet swings with tremendous power. You know, Michael Johnson's a pretty cool story. You know, when he came to Clemson, he actually redshirted his first year and had to put on a lot of weight and really was more of a late bloomer. Caden was a little bit, you know, more ready when he came to campus than Michael was, and Michael wound up being, you know, one of the best power hitters in Clemson history. They're both very, very, very special players, and Michael's a great guy. I actually missed Michael. Worked for Coach Leggett, played mm-hmm. for Coach Leggett, worked for Coach Leggett, but I know Michael quite well. But they are very, very similar guys. Caden and Michael both, if they hit the ball in the air, it typically does not stay in the ballpark. Usually when both those guys got the ball in the air, they hit it over the fence.
USC Upstate. Everybody will look at that and go, oh, man, that's a W. Let's move on. You better hold on, right? You mentioned to us earlier, this is as good a club as you're going to see all season long. They're legit.
Well, we played them early in the year, one game, and they smoked us. And, I mean, quite honestly, if you look at – I'm sitting here looking at their stats right now trying to figure out how to match up with them. They're 30-9 on the season. They have a .302 batting average with a .401 on base percentage, and they have a .288 team ERA. This is a legitimate ball club. This is a postseason team, no doubt about it. In fact, of all the teams that we've played, this may be the best baseball team we've played. They're an older club. The COVID shutdown from last year probably did them a lot of favors because they were an older club already last year and all their guys came back. So they have a veteran team, a very disciplined ball club at the plate, and an outstanding pitching staff. So they just don't beat themselves. When you've got a pitching staff like that, you have to beat them, and you have to expect a fairly lower scoring game against a pitching staff like this. So it's very important for us to get off to a great start. We've got to throw the ball well. We've got to play great defense behind our pitching staff, and we're going to need some timely hitting when we get opportunities to compete with this club. This is a great team.
Well, the good news is after Upstate, it's 3 with Georgia Tech, a home game with South Carolina, and 3 with Florida State on the road, and then 3 with Duke. So I figure from here on it's just downhill and sunny for you, right?
Well, you know, the battle cry for our team is going to be the tougher it is, the better we like it. You know, that's the bottom line, because that's got to be our mindset. Just the challenge that we're looking at for our, you know, the 11 games that we have remaining. And we really don't spend too much time looking ahead. You know, we've got to focus on USC Upstate. That's plenty enough to focus on. But good gracious, I mean, you've got Upstate. You got Georgia Tech at Georgia Tech. You've got South Carolina, who's a great club. We've got Florida State at Florida State. And then we finish with Duke. So, I mean, it's going to be an incredibly tough stretch for us. But, you know, the bottom line is we just have to focus on what we do. And when things are going well for us, what are we doing well? And if we can do that, we'll give ourselves a chance.
Coach, we'll keep it up, man. Listen, I'd rather be playing my best baseball in May. And it appears that's exactly what your team's doing, which is a great thing.
Yeah, hopefully we can keep doing it. We certainly are going to need to, again, with the gauntlet we got to run through. We need to be playing our best baseball, and we're certainly doing that right now. And, you know, hopefully, you know, Grice will keep getting pitches to hit.
Hey, Monty, be well. Thanks as always. Appreciate the time. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Yep, thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You got it.
You bet. Monty Lee, head baseball coach at Clemson. Tigers are rolling 6 straight. Upstate tonight, 6 o'clock. You can see that on ACCNX on the ESPN app. 3 in Atlanta, South Carolina at home, at Florida State, then 3 with Duke at home to finish the regular season for the Tigers. It's going to be, we talked about Notre Dame yesterday and kind of the way that all sets up. It's going to be quite a run in ACC baseball up into the championship and then through the championship.
But you know what, though, Wes? Given the Tigers' slow start, and Monty be the first one to admit it, they are playing their best baseball. Mm. And the fact they're going to be taking on some teams coming down the stretch here that, if they continue to play well, will enhance that resume, which is what it's all about coming down the stretch, getting into the ACC tournament, which is going to be a blast right here in a couple weeks.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
All right. New York life on board.
Don't miss the Friday show, I guess, is the bottom line. If you thought we've had some good Friday shows here in the last couple of weeks, don't miss this Friday show, apparently, because Packer's going to eat egg custard on
I am. Never had it.
My grandmother's recipe.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's on its way, according to the text messages. It's on its way, coming down I-85. Everybody, get out of the way.
Yeah.
Here comes Taylor and Miss Jean. We got to get to exit 33 ASAP. Meet the Pac-Man. Make the exchange of the Elon Fish
for
egg custard pie. Let's talk some Wake Forest soccer, shall we?
Oh, boy.
You ready?
Sure. Yeah. Bobby Moose is here, the head soccer coach at Wake Forest. He's entered the proverbial bubble because Wake played, as he told us during the break, they played at home, benefit to the Deacs for sure, but now he's entered the confines of the bubble. So how are we doing? Everything good? We got everybody set? You got your meeting rooms all spaced out and ready to go now to play Kentucky?
Yeah, we're ready to go. First off, thanks for having me. Good morning. The custard got me a little bit distracted right now, but besides that, we're doing well. We got in. I thought I didn't even know if I was going to get on. You were talking about the custard so much.
Well, you know, you better be good, Coach.
we got in the bubble last night. You know, had our first meal, and they're setting up. Well, I told them to leave me alone a little bit. They're setting up breakfast behind me, but you know, we're looking forward to being here. Hopefully. for a while, but obviously the site is focused on Kentucky on Thursday.
All right, have we got the vampire bats out of the room yet? Have we worked that deal out yet? What's the story behind all that?
Yeah, I don't want to throw the hotel under the bus, but it was for some of us, it was a first experience. We were doing some team video last night, and a large bat came out of nowhere and started swooping around. Guys were ducking under tables and chairs. It made video. We woke them up for the rest of the video session. Let's put it that way.
So will Kentucky be more difficult than the bat? What do you think?
If Kentucky are nearly as athletic as this bat last night, we're going to have some problems. I don't have a guy in the room that can defend that thing.
So what about Kentucky? What do we know, though, about your opponent? Because this is unusual. We've got a little ACC-SEC soccer thing going on. What do we know about Kentucky?
They're a good team. They're a well-coached team. They're organized. They got a lot of a wealth of experience. You know, they're a big team, very good and aggressive on attacking set pieces. To be fair, I think the Coastal Carolina game hopefully helps us in terms of our preparation for Kentucky. I'm not saying similar styles, but a bigger restart team in Coastal. We had to defend quite a bit, long throw-ins, restarts, corners. The other night. So hopefully, you know, we can make some adjustments, some things that went maybe not the way we wanted against Coastal, and try to clean that up for Kentucky here tomorrow.
Bobby, we just had Monty Lee on from Clemson's baseball program. He's got a young man named Caden Grice who the baseball looks like a beach ball to him. In your world, Omar Hernandez has had, what, four goals in the last, what, five goals the last four matches? Huge performance in the win against Coastal Carolina. What's the soccer ball look like right now to Omar Hernandez? Or when it's on his foot, does it look like it's going in the net automatically? I mean, he's got to have an unbelievable vibe.
Yeah, I mean, first off, he's one of the hardest working kids you can coach. So it comes with the work ethic. It's not like, hey, it's just easy to him right now. But I'll tell you what we needed with the loss of the players that we lost mid-year. To the professional ranks, we needed young guys to step up, and Omar being more of a role player in the fall is really taking a grasp of this in ownership of a position to be a key player for us moving forward, and obviously really well-timed goals too. And I was fooling around with the media people after our game the other day. Is none of his goals have been easy. You know, they've been great finishes too, so flair for the dramatic, and we definitely have needed them. I mean, obviously timely goals, a really, really special left foot in and around the goal on restarts. So he's been definitely a huge plus for us here this spring season.
Bobby, we've talked about how long it has been for student athletes this year. Given the fact COVID for the last 15 months, the fact that you had a fall season, a spring season, and completely different rosters. Discuss how different the fall roster is versus the team that you're going to roll out there tomorrow against Kentucky.
Kentucky lost a couple of players to the professional ranks mid-year. Wake Forest, you know, in this group, the adversity and the resiliency that they showed, it's been incredible. We lost 10 players from the fall team until this team. So we have a lot of guys that really didn't play much or if at all a year ago and even in the spring that are in starting roles for us right now. And to be fair is – they've stepped up greatly. This has been probably the most proud I've been of a group just with the adversity that they had to deal with, right? Even just the mental focus that they need. And we're extremely young, and we're riding that youth in a lot of ways. There's a lot of naivety. There's some fun and good energy and some immaturity at the same time. But with that, like I said, we're going to make mistakes each and every game, and we just need to make sure that we make different mistakes and we learn from those mistakes. But yeah, you know, we've started 7-8 freshmen a game, and it's invaluable experience not only for us moving forward in the NCAA tournament, but for future years as well.
All right, but this is the sixth straight year in the Sweet 16 for you. But does it feel like you've coached two different teams this year?
We have coached two different teams this year. You know, you know, guys make fun of me a lot. I'm starting to hit that point where I forget stuff. And I'll call people different names just because I have completely different guys on the field. It's not age. I know I'm at that point. I'm close, but it's not that, guys. It's just I'm there's someone new in every position almost each and every game. So we got hit with some of the injury bugs too. Two of our starters from the fall, as soon as the spring, the first game in the spring, they've been out the entire spring. They got back last week. So when we talk about last year, that was 2019 in our Final Four run. But last year feels like the fall season. So I feel like we've coached two different seasons, two different teams and two different years. But it's just one long year.
I think it's been interesting to talk to coaches and players, student athletes, regarding the mental approach. And we talk about the physicality of what you do, whether it's soccer, whether it's softball, football, basketball, et cetera, but more so this year than ever before. I think the mental well-being of a student athlete and a coach, administrator, everybody, broadcasters, everybody's gone through it. So where would you say your team is now that you can kind of see light at the end of the tunnel and you've worked this hard with both teams to get to this stage with this big showdown tomorrow? Mentally, where is this group? And where are you, Coach, from that perspective too?
I think I would be lying if anyone said we weren't tired. You know, we're trying to enjoy the time that we have together. We've been calling this like bonus soccer, you know, just there's only 16 teams left. So what can we get out of this in terms of growing as a young team? But it has been hard when you think about, I look at the game of soccer being all about decisions and making a lot of decisions in a very short period of time. And when you're sticking young players with not a lot of experience into games, you know, you say games, I mean, you have training each and every day where they have to make decisions. And I think that mental, that mental fatigue sets in. And I think the support staff, our staff, our administration has done a really good job of, opening up more things to try to have a little bit more normality. I think if anything, just to hit that, I think it was a huge turn in the right direction on Sunday night when we played at Wake. And we had fans. It was the most amount of fans that we've had the entire year. And I think that alone, looking at the guys' faces, was all of this has been worth it. You know, and now to be here in the bubble and to be in the Sweet 16, you know, trying to play for another spot in the quarterfinal, you know, you have to think all of this has been worth it. I mean, the ACC has done such a great job, as you guys know, to allow us to play in two seasons, never mind one. And it's all been worth it, you know, all the time and the effort that so many people put in to give us this opportunity. So I think we're starting to see a little bit more excitement. Obviously, the weather's changing. We're outside more. Things are starting to open up. All that hard work is starting to pay off.
I will ask you this as a guy who's done this for a long time. Mark and I have talked about some of these sports becoming two-semester sports that have always been one-semester sports. Now you can kind of appreciate maybe what Jen Hoover and Steve Forbes go through where they're coaching two semester sports, right? I mean, it's a long run in basketball. People don't think about how long those two semester sports are, do they?
No, but it's awesome. There's no one, I'm not going to say that I don't love it. To be able to prepare your team for a week for a competition compared to us playing Tuesday, Friday or Tuesday, Saturday, you see a development in your team. You know, you think about this group alone, right? Whereas if we had to play Tuesday, Friday in the spring with this brand new team, we would have never gotten anything accomplished in terms of our collective development, never mind individual development. So I've really enjoyed it, you know, having one opponent a week, giving the guys a little bit of extra time, downtime. Like we give an extra day off a week. No way we could have done that in the single season model. So obviously there's a lot of things you learn along the way. It's longer. It is a mental grind, but I do think long-term physically and for the overall development, it's the best thing for college soccer.
Well, Coach, listen, beware of the bats. Stay low, keep moving, score goals, and keep on advancing, my man. The league is loaded, and you're part of it. And continued success.
I appreciate it. The ACC's 5-0. We want to make it 10.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Jamie Ortega,
the all-time leader at North Carolina. What a career for Jamie Ortega.
And the goal! Charlotte North gets goal number 10.
Marino again gets a piece of it. Taylor Marino was ready and waiting.
Emma Trenchard.
Trenchard off and running.
The freshman Emma Ward. Has a step and uses it. A career high 5 goals for the freshman. Bell Smith, the pump fake, then the score for the freshman. Bell Smith delivers.
Paige Petty can score from anywhere. What a shot. It's Paige Petty. Of course it is.
Our lips are sealed. We are not going to let anything out by 9 a.m. because the awards are coming at the top of the hour for the Power Hour. However, okay. Wes, before we get to that point in time, we have plays of the year. We got goals, we got assists, we got stops, and we got heaves. Right? We like to stick heaves. So let's start with goals.
Yeah.
You in the mood? Let's do it.
All right. Here's a surprise. We're going to start with Charlotte North, right, of Boston College.
Which he does.
Charlotte North behind the back against Virginia Tech.
Love that shot.
Excuse me?
Is that crazy?
Excuse me. No. Yeah, behind the back. One of 10 goals, by the way. Yeah. Charlotte dodges 3 Syracuse defenders. 1, 2, 3. There you go. How about that? Caitlin Wurzburger of Carolina between the legs. That's my favorite one, by the way. That's crazy.
Is it? That's
Here's
your
Jamie Biscup of Virginia.
Oh, that's a good one too.
Behind the back.
I don't know. Wes. Oh, gosh. What are you going to do with
Ward
that?
Emma Ward behind the back.
Emma, what are you doing? Don't embarrass everybody. Gosh, that's crazy.
Huh?
It's crazy. I still
don't
like
want the Wurzburger between the legs shot?
I know. Listen, they're all great. The ladies are unbelievable. But I still like Charlotte North's move because that's what I do with Chester and Fuller with pizza scraps. When I get the crust, the pizza crust, I'll give them the old over the shoulder. And you know what? Fuller goes for it. Chester, you know, he'll finally wait till it stops, Fuller. Then he finds it, and then he chews it. But Charlotte North's goal was my favorite in that group, in my opinion. Just my call.
All right. How about the best assist of the year? BC's Kara Urbank to Annie Walsh against Syracuse.
And the toss.
That's not bad.
I like the toss after the goal here.
Oh. Man, just throw it away. Here's Katie Hogue doing Katie Hogue things.
All day long.
Look at the feed.
She's so good.
Jeez. Yeah, I was told as a kid lacrosse is a lot like basketball, and when I watch the women play, I see it. The men, it's just an unbelievable show, but the women, you see more of the basketball-type things in lacrosse.
Backdoor cuts, give and goes. Really yeah. You're right. You're right.
Let's get to how about the best stops and goal? I got to believe Taylor Marino's on this.
Of course.
Let's see what we get from those. I got to believe. Oh, we're going to do stick throws first. We'll change pack. Stick throws. Ready?
I'm not saying a word till 9 a.m. That way we cannot get in trouble.
Okay. All right. Here are the stick throws. Now, we started down the road on this in our first highlights. They'll score, and then the stick throw. Whoa, is that Bell Smith?
Yeah, it's Bell, number 5.
Here's some more stick throws. The rule in the women's game, they got to check the stick. So they lay it on the ground for the official. Oh, that's I like that now. Yeah, that's me. That's me right there. Flip it to the side.
I like
Emma.
Can't
sling it 30 yards.
I like Emma here.
Oh, just Emma Ward now.
Slamming it.
Clubhouse leader.
Yeah. Emma's got my – that's the vote.
Go get it. You want it? Go get it. Oh, that's a good one too. That's Megan Carney. That's our friend.
We hope. By the way,
back Megan.
Speedy recovery for Megan. But I'm going to go Emma Ward if I was going to give out. I just like the violence that she tosses it down with total disregard. You want to check it, you go, you find it, you check it, hand it back to me, because in 2 minutes I'm going to score again. I'm going to do this all over again.
I'm going to tell you, if I scored a goal, it would be at the midfield stripe. I would sling it overhand.
You would treat it. You would treat it like that LSU football player treated at Nike against Florida last year in the Swamp, right?
Yep.
You just toss that thing past midfield.
Pretty close.
Get a flag.
That'd be about right.
And then lose.
Okay. let's go one more stick throw here.
One more.
You ready? Oh, look at this. I love this. Watch. Yeah! Oh, we got another one. Where'd that go?
That one's good, too.
Oh, right? Spiked it.
Yeah, I like the spiker.
Tried to set it in the ground. If that was grass, that might have stuck in the ground. Oh, there's some good ones. These are good.
Yeah.
Man, look at the best of stick throws, volume 2. It's like a VHS tape you get for $9.95.
Oh, there you would go.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Come on.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like the violence.
Tell me, though, if you were playing, you wouldn't try and stick it in the ground. You'd try and stick it in the ground like a flagpole.
Here's what I would do. I would pretend I'm at Florida State. It's packed for a football game.
Osceola aboard Renegade.
And I'm looking for Renegade, and it's flaming. And I would treat that stick just like Chief Osceola gets that spear at midfield. And I would put that thing 6 inches into the turf and just force the ump to have to yank it out of there and make sure the stick's good. Okay, thank you very much. Give it to me. Let's go.
Very similar to what you did to a 5-iron at Bermuda Run one day, I'm sure, as a kid. As a young, enterprising golfer.
Let me tell you something. I only tossed it once, and that was at Harbortown on my way to shoot about 98 with mono. And I tossed a club, and Billy saw me, and he looked at me and said, "You'll never do that again." And I did. I did. I put the helicopter on some shot. It was on the 16th hole at Harbortown. Par 4, dogleg left. And I hit it left. I hit it left of left. And I helicoptered, and Billy was standing behind a palm
talking
tree.
To Mark after
every time I watch
a club at Harbortown.
I swear to God, it's a true story. And Billy was standing behind one of those palm trees there on 16, and I helicoptered one. He looked at me and said, "You'll never do that again." And I never did.
That's it.
True story.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.